Fine, I say. Just be home by dinner. Nico nods, then hurries off in the direction of his friend's house. I was so focused on my son's imminent escape that I hadn't noticed my husband in the corner of the backyard. Not that it's unusual to see Enzo in the backyard. It's his favorite place. But he isn't working out there. Instead, he's talking quietly on his phone, a smile playing on his lips. Who is he talking to? I wave at him to get his attention. He blinks a few times when he notices me, and the smile momentarily drops off his face. But he recovers quickly and waves back. He murmurs a few more unintelligible words into the phone, then shoves it into the pocket of his worn blue jeans. Mili, he jogs across the lawn to talk to me. I have very good news.
Oh?
Yes, there's a potential client with two large estates that need services. Very big job. This is very good. I glance down at his phone, protruding from his pocket.
Were you talking to the client?
Yes.
He hesitates.
Well, no, not exactly. That was Suzette on the phone. The clients, they are friends of hers. She would like me to meet with them tomorrow.
Oh.
I'd been hoping tomorrow could be a family day.
Where are you meeting them?
He hesitates another beat. It is informal meeting at private beach. Alarm bells sound in the back of my head. A meeting at the beach? Will Suzette be there?
Well, yes. They are her friends.
I do not like any part of this. First, Enzo is ducking out on a family day. Second, a business meeting at the beach. Third, I don't want him alone around Suzette in a bikini. Especially after that smile on his face when he was talking to her. A fleeting thought drifts into my head. The other day, when the plumber showed up to demand his money, Suzette was wearing a new, expensive-looking bracelet that she told me was a gift. And then, at the same time, $1,000 were suddenly missing from our bank account. Is it possible that Enzo used that money to buy a gift for Suzette? No, I don't believe that. He wouldn't. And yet... If you're going to the beach tomorrow, I say, you need to take the kids, the whole family.
What?
No, I'm not asking Enzo. He shakes his head.
Mili, this is important business meeting.
Our family is important too, I point out. You've been working nonstop since we moved here for us, and we hardly ever see you. I continue. You haven't taken the kids to the beach yet since we moved here. They would love it. Nico especially could use a day at the beach. He's been so down since getting kicked out of Little League. And I'll keep an eye on them. I won't disturb you until you're done with your meeting. He's quiet for a moment, thinking it over.
Okay, yes. I see what you say. I will speak with Suzette, but she will not be happy.
Yes, I'll bet he's right. 36. We are on our way to the beach. Suzette reluctantly permitted the family to tag along on the beach trip. I didn't hear the conversation, but I'd imagine she did everything in her power to keep us from going. But we're still here. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's a private beach on the coast that only Suzette and her elite group of friends have access to. The beach requires a special card to get in. I've been to a lot of beaches in my life, but this is most likely the snootiest beach I've ever been to. I bet it's really nice. Enzo is driving, and as usual, he's driving way too fast. I thought he would stop doing that after we had kids, but he still does it. And it doesn't help that the kids love it. "Can you please slow down?" I murmur as we pass a sign on the expressway that says 55 miles per hour. We are at least 20 miles above that.
"Mili," he says, "everyone is going this fast. We go slower and they will all be going around us."
"I don't drive this fast," I point out. He winks at me.
"Yes, but you drive like old lady."
"No, I don't."
"My mistake. Old ladies drive faster than you."
I roll my eyes. "Very funny."
"It's true, Mom," Nico chimes in. "People are always honking at you to go faster."
Apparently on Long Island, you're not allowed to go less than 20 miles above the speed limit. Except as we're taking the off-ramp from the expressway, the sound of a police siren comes from behind us. Enzo looks in the rearview mirror and swears in Italian under his breath.
"You got to be kidding me," he mutters.
He pulls over to the side of the road while I resist the urge to say I told him so. The police officer takes his sweet time getting out of the car, while Enzo fumbles around looking for his license.
"Is Dad going to be arrested?" Ada asks in a worried voice.
"No," I say.
"That would be cool," Nico says.
"Still no," I say. The cop is a guy in his 30s who seems like he's not too excited to be doing this in the 90-degree heat. Enzo rolls down the window and smiles charmingly at him.
"Hello, officer,"
he says in an accent so thick it's hard to understand him.
"Is problem?"
"License and registration," the officer says in a bored voice.
Enzo hands over the paperwork, waiting to hear what the cop has to say. He inspects Enzo's license and finally says,
"You know how fast you were going, Mr. Accardi?"
"I am so sorry," Enzo says. "But see, gas dial is almost empty. I must go fast to find gas station before we run out."
The officer stares at him for a second, scratching his head.
"It doesn't work like that, you know?"
"No!"
Enzo flashes him an astonished look, which actually seems pretty genuine.
"I did not know."
"No, it doesn't."
He looks down at the license again, then back at my husband and the rest of us in the car.
"Okay, I don't want to spoil your afternoon with your family. Go get some gas for your car. No need to go so fast."
"Grazie."
Enzo smiles up at the officer.
"You have good day, sir."
It's only after the police officer has gone back to his car and Enzo has rolled up the window that he winks at me.
"It's too easy."
He never gets tickets. He always manages to talk his way out of it, or lie his way out of it, as the case may be. It's astonishing how good he is at saying things that are 100% untrue with a completely straight face. I've always known my husband is an excellent liar. It just never bothered me until I suspected he was hiding something from me.
37.
Jonathan and Suzette beat us to the beach. Even though we were likely driving faster, they didn't get pulled over by the cops on the way over. We park in the special fancy lot for the private beach, and when I get out of the car, Jonathan and Suzette are making their way to the entrance, which is guarded by a tough-looking guy in a black wife-beater t-shirt and swim shorts. He's like the private beach equivalent of a bouncer. Jonathan is carrying two beach chairs and an umbrella, while Suzette just has a small tote bag slung over her shoulder. Jonathan looks like the typical beachgoer at the beginning of the season. A little too pale, a bit of a gut hanging over his swim trunks, his white feet shoved into a pair of flip-flops, a baseball cap covering his thinning hair. Suzette, on the other hand, looks like she has been going to the beach all winter. She is perfectly tanned, her Cartier sunglasses perched on her nose, and she is wearing a tiny bikini that shows off a spectacularly fit body. After two children and 40-plus years of gravity taking its toll, my body doesn't look like that. It can't. But even when I was 25, I never felt comfortable prancing around the beach in a bikini the size of a handkerchief. So today, I am wearing a modest one-piece bathing suit with a cover-up over it. And much like Jonathan, I am painfully pale. I probably won't take the cover-up off the whole time, since I'm not much of a swimmer. The beach bouncer is checking out Suzette in her teeny tiny bikini. Actually, a lot of people are checking out Suzette. Even I'm having trouble not staring a bit. When does she have time to get her belly that firm? And I'm guessing she doesn't have any C-section scars or stretch marks she needs to cover up. Enzo has his t-shirt and trunks on, and he is wrangling our own beach furniture he pulled from the trunk. To be honest, I wouldn't have blamed him if he were checking Suzette out in that tiny bikini. He's only human. But I don't catch his gaze dipping below the neckline.
"Millie!" Suzette says. "What an interesting cover-up you have on. I love how you don't feel like you need to spend a ton of money on a beach outfit. That is so you."
That was a backhanded compliment if there ever was one. But I can't really argue with it. I got the cover-up from the discount rack. And while Enzo has not been checking out Suzette, I can't say the same for her. Her cool blue-green eyes rake over his body, and her lips curl, and he hasn't even taken his shirt off yet. We're not even on the beach yet, and suddenly I want to go home. But I suppose it's better I'm here instead of leaving him alone with Suzette in her tiny bikini.
"Did you have trouble finding the beach?" Suzette asks. "We were wondering if you guys got lost along the way."
Nico quickly spills the beans.
"Dad got pulled over by the cops."
Enzo laughs.
"I was going too fast," they said.
"I'm sure you weren't,"
Suzette shakes her head.
"The police around here are so overzealous."
"Well, we're glad you could make it,"
Jonathan says. Unlike his wife, there doesn't seem to be any overtone in his statement. He seems genuinely glad to see us.
"How are you doing, Nico? We miss you coming over to do chores."
It's kind of Jonathan to say that, even though really I know they were sick of having Nico over at their house and breaking half their living room. Nico shrugs. I want to tell him he's being rude, but it feels like there's almost no point. His moodiness has gotten even worse lately. I finally called his pediatrician and took him in for a visit, but after listening to his heart and lungs, she didn't have much else to add. She didn't recommend therapy, In fact, she said the same exact thing Enzo said. Boys can be aggressive sometimes. He's probably still adjusting to the move. Just give it time. Where are the clients we're meeting? I ask Suzette.
Oh,
she shrugs.
They canceled.
Enzo doesn't seem the slightest bit surprised, which makes me wonder if there was ever a client to begin with. I mean, a beach meeting? That sounded so made up. But no, I'm being paranoid. I'm sure there was a client. People do cancel. Suzette leads us to the beach to find the perfect spot to set up. Except she can't seem to decide on the perfect spot. We tromp through half the beach, past several spots that seem perfectly fine. Poor Jonathan is struggling with carrying the two chairs and umbrella, so I offer to grab the umbrella for him in addition to our own. Suzette could offer to carry at least one thing, but she doesn't seem inclined to do so. Jonathan is pretty good-natured about the whole thing, though.
Okay,
she finally says when it feels like my arms are about to fall off. This seems good. Jonathan drops the two chairs on the ground, but just as he's flexing his arms, she says,
Wait, maybe we should go down that way. The sun is better over there.
Jonathan is ready to pick up the chairs again, but I've had enough.
Suzette, I say, this is perfect, and I'm not walking one more step.
She rolls her eyes.
All right.
But Millie, walking is good for you. It's slimming. Would punching her in the face be slimming? Because that might happen today. After we get our chairs and towels set up, I grab the spray bottle of sunscreen from my tote bag. Enzo always refuses it, but I like to spray it on the kids and definitely on myself. I'm the only one who ever gets sunburned, but isn't sunscreen supposed to prevent cancer or something like that? Anyway, the kids don't have a choice.
Oh, Millie!
Suzette gasps as she watches me spray down Ada.
You're not actually spraying sunscreen on your children, are you?
I obviously am.
Yes?
Well, you know the spray has all sorts of toxic chemicals in it, she says, and it's all in the air now. We're basically all inhaling sunscreen now. Should I be more bothered about the fact that I might be inhaling sunscreen? Somehow, I'm not.
Uh-huh.
Also, she adds, it's flammable. Nico's eyes widen.
You mean we could catch on fire?
You're not going to catch on fire from your sunscreen, I tell him. He looks disappointed. Suzette reaches into her own bag and pulls out a white tube. This is the best sunscreen on the market. It's all natural ingredients, and it has SPF 200. You can't find SPF 200 anywhere. Why on earth would we need sunscreen that is SPF 200? Does she think we're going to be running through a circle of fire to get to the water? Enzo is taken off his t-shirt, and I can't help but notice the way Suzette's eyes bulge as she looks over his dark, sculpted chest. I love that I have a handsome, muscular husband, but also, sometimes, I wish he would let himself get fat and out of shape.
Enzo, she says, would you like to try my sunscreen?
He laughs.
I do not need. I never get burns.
Yes, but this is good for you, even if you don't get burned, she says. It prevents skin cancer, you know.
Yeah? Enzo says with interest, although I have been saying the exact same thing to him for the last decade. Yes, of course it does, she says eagerly. You should at least put it on your shoulders. Here, let me help you. My mouth falls open as Suzette squeezes some sunscreen onto her palm and then starts rubbing it onto my husband's shoulders. Is she really doing this? Is she really rubbing sunscreen all over my husband? This seems wildly inappropriate. I look over at Jonathan, expecting that he will seem as horrified as I feel, but he has his own tube of obscenely expensive sunscreen that is apparently made for people who will be vacationing on the sun, and he's rubbing lotion onto his arms. Then he tries to get some on his back, but he can't quite reach. And, of course, his wife is busy rubbing her hands all over my own husband. I am good, Enzo says after this goes on for far too long. I have enough. We'll come off in the water anyway. Oh, no, Suzette says. This stuff is waterproof. You could swim all day and you will still have SPF 200 protection. Enzo's eyes widen. Yeah? I am so sick of hearing about this stupid sunscreen. Ada, Suzette says, would you like to try this sunscreen? Ada looks down at the tube, but then shakes her head. I don't blame her. She never burns, like Enzo, and I'm sure she doesn't want to smear that white cream all over herself. Nico? Suzette asks. Nico just stares at Suzette. He doesn't answer, but he gives her this really cold look. I don't know if I've ever seen him look at someone that way before, and the truth is, it sends a chill down my spine. But then he looks away, and I'm not sure if I imagined the whole thing. The kids want to go in the water, and Enzo is happy to take them. I would have thought Suzette would be the kind of person who would want to sunbathe on the beach all afternoon, especially after the fuss she kicked up about where we were going to park ourselves. But as soon as Enzo says he wants to go in the water, she quickly agrees to follow. You want to come, Mili? Enzo asked me. I shake my head. I'm just going to relax over here. Jonathan rubs at a glob of sunscreen that is still intact on the bridge of his nose. He starts to follow Suzette, but before he can take more than a couple of steps, she turns to look at him. No, she says. You stay here. I'm going for a swim. He nods and, without question, turns around to go back to his beach chair. He settles down and picks up a paperback. I crane my neck to look at the title. Madame Bovary. You don't want to go for a swim? I ask him. He waves a hand.
Not really.
Because it looked like you were going to go in the water before Suzette told you not to.
I don't mind.
Maybe he doesn't mind, but I find Suzette's bossiness infuriating, and before I can stop myself, I blurt out, It just seems like it shouldn't be Suzette's decision whether you go swimming or not. Jonathan shrugs and smiles.
She likes to have her space sometimes. I don't mind, like I said.
I've asked around, and it turns out Suzette isn't that successful as a real estate agent. And yet, she has the biggest house by far in our cul-de-sac, in a town where housing prices are very high. Clearly, Jonathan is the one making all the money to support her lifestyle. And yet, she's the one who gets to boss him around. I mean, he isn't even allowed to go in the water at the beach? That's nuts. It's a huge body of water, I point out. It's the Atlantic Ocean.
It seems like both of you could swim in it without bothering each other.
He rests his book down on his lap.
Do you want to go swimming, Millie?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Jonathan looks at me blankly. Does he really not care at all how much Suzette bosses him around? I'd like to think that Enzo and I are equal partners in all of our decision-making, but from what I've noticed, it seems like Suzette is making every important decision in the Lowell household. Then again, Enzo did take $1,000 out of our joint bank account without telling me. But he's already put the money back. I'm sure he was telling the truth that it was for equipment for his business. Like, 99% sure. The clear blue water is glistening under the sun. Both my kids are strong swimmers like Enzo. He used to take them to the YMCA when they were little, and he taught them both to swim before they could walk. I take stock of both of their dark heads bobbing in the water. Ada is near Enzo, and then Nico is a bit away from them, and he's... Why does it look like he's talking to Suzette? What could Nico possibly have to say to Suzette? It seems strange, especially after that seething look he gave her earlier. I wish I knew what they were talking about, but I'm not anywhere close to being in earshot.
Anyway, Jonathan is saying, we're not leaving anytime soon. I can swim later. This sunscreen will last for hours. Days, actually, if I needed it to.
I manage to tear my gaze away from the water. Does it really?
Oh, yes, it's great stuff.
He digs into Suzette's tote and pulls out the tube.
Do you want some?
Sure, I say. Jonathan hands it over to me. He doesn't try to rub it into my back and shoulders, which is very appropriate, given he's not my boyfriend or husband. It looks like a pretty ordinary tube of sunscreen, although I have to admit, it smells nice. I'm about to squeeze some of this magical sunscreen onto my palm when I get interrupted by a sound coming from the direction of the ocean. Someone is screaming. 38. It all happened so fast. Drowning is quick. There is a huge commotion out in the ocean, but I can't see much. I leap to my feet, and Jonathan does the same next to me. Whatever is happening right where I saw my children swimming just a short time ago. The lifeguard has climbed down from his perch and is running for the shore. But it turns out he's too late. Enzo is already coming out of the water, holding her. Suzette turns out to be the person who was almost drowning. She's clinging to Enzo's neck as he heroically carries her out of the water. She is still conscious, although her face is pink and she's coughing. As much as I would like to accuse her of fake drowning, she looks like she's in real distress. Enzo lays her down on the sand and gets on his knees beside her. The lifeguard crouches next to her too, but Suzette's attention is solely on my husband.
You okay? Enzo asks her.
Yes, she gasps, then starts coughing again. That was just... It was so scary. I'm okay, though.
She reaches for my husband's hand. Thank you. Thank you for saving me. You're my hero.
Oh, brother.
I look over at Jonathan, who does not seem the slightest bit bothered that an incredibly sexy Italian man is hovering over his wife. And she is pretty much drooling over him. Or maybe the drooling is from the near drowning.
You sure you're okay, miss?
The lifeguard asks her.
I'm fine.
She manages to prop herself up on her elbows.
It just felt like my leg got tangled in something, and it was pulling me under. It was terrifying.
Maybe some seaweed, the lifeguard suggests.
Yes,
Suzette says, although she doesn't look convinced. I agree that it's not clear how seaweed could pull someone under the water, but I'm not sure what another explanation could be. Ada and Nico have come out of the water, looking decidedly shaken by the incident. Ada is hugging herself, and Nico has planted himself at the shore, about 10 feet away from us, an unreadable expression on his face.
Suzette, dear, Jonathan says, I think it would be best if we got you home.
Perhaps, she says, but I don't want to ruin everyone's fun.
Do not worry about fun,
Enzo says. That's when I realize she is still holding his hand. Or he is holding her hand. Either way, their hands are very much linked.
You must take care of yourself.
You truly saved my life, she says. Honestly, I was so scared, and you saved me.
He's nothing.
Enzo waves a hand, but he's eating it up. He loves being the hero. Who could blame him? Enzo helps Suzette to her feet, and Jonathan reaches out to assist her, but she doesn't make any moves to go to him. We end up packing all our stuff because everyone is so shaken, and it's too hard to enjoy a day at the beach at this point. I mean, I could have still enjoyed myself, but even the kids look like they want to leave. Unfortunately, Enzo is helping Suzette, who you would think suffered some kind of leg trauma where she can't walk anymore. So we end up having to grab most of the furniture ourselves. The kids take one chair each. I grab two, and I manage to stuff the umbrella under my arm as well. It's not easy going, but somehow we make it back to the cars.
Thank you again.
Suzette gazes up at Enzo as he helps her hobble to Jonathan's Mercedes, depositing her directly into the passenger seat.
You saved my life.
And when she says it, she puts her arm on his biceps, which, honestly, feels a little unnecessary. The way she is gazing at him, I feel like if her husband wasn't a couple of feet away, and I wasn't standing there staring daggers at her, the two of them would be making out as we speak. Not that I think Enzo would do that to me. But if I didn't exist, who knows? Suzette is a very attractive woman, and although I dislike her, he doesn't seem to dislike her the way I do.
Drive home safely, he says to her.
We will, Jonathan says cheerfully. Thanks again, Enzo. I appreciate you looking after my wife.
Is he genuinely thanking my husband for pawing at his wife? I wish I could say that I'm relieved when they drive away, but it's hard to ever get rid of somebody when they live right next door to you.
39. What? You think I should let her drown, Mili? Is that what you want?
I have been moping around all evening, ever since we returned home from the beach. Despite only having been there less than an hour, there is sand all over everything. Every crack of my body seems to have a few grains of sand in it. Even after showering, I still feel a bit sandy. So yes, I've been cranky. And when we got into our bed to turn in for the night, I couldn't help but remark about Enzo's heroic rescue in the ocean.
I didn't want you to let her drown, I grumble. But did you have to save her? Like that?
Like what?
Like...
I sit up in bed, scratching at my toes, which still feel like they have sand between them.
Like so... heroically.
His lips twitch.
Heroically.
I mean, she could have walked back to the car by herself, or Jonathan could have walked with her. He shrugs.
She wanted me.
I'll bet. I grit my teeth. And how convenient that the client canceled.
No, not convenient, he frowns. I wanted to meet the client. I want this job.
You didn't look surprised when they didn't show.
Because she told me this morning. But I still wanted to have beach day with you and the kids.
Right. He grunts.
Millie, this is ridiculous. I do not understand why you are upset.
Okay, so if some handsome guy pulled me out of the water and was fawning over me, that wouldn't bother you at all.
No, it would not.
If that's true, that makes me even more upset. Why wouldn't he be jealous if some handsome guy were hitting on me?
Because I trust you,
he adds, before I can get myself more worked up.
And you can trust me. You know that, yes?
Do I? Before we moved to 14 Locust Street, the answer would have been a resounding yes. But the amount of time he's been spending with Suzette Lowell has made me suspicious. I mean, a conversation about rose bushes in the middle of the night? Really? And yet, Enzo is a good man. I believe that with all my heart. He's staring at me, waiting for me to reply. And there's only one right answer. Yes, I trust you.
Good. Now calm down. If Suzette turns up murdered, you will be first suspect. Ha ha.
Enzo reaches over to shut out the light. He moves closer to me, his arm encircling my body. He's in the mood, I can tell. But I can't get into it. Even though he has assuaged some of my worries about what happened at the beach, one of them still remains, and I can't quite let it go. Enzo, I say.
Shh,
he murmurs, his hand sliding up my thigh.
No more talk about Suzette.
But how do you think Suzette got caught under the water? His hand comes to a quick halt.
What?
I mean, I say, she said her leg got caught on something, and that's what made her go under the water. What do you think she got caught on?
Seaweed?
So seaweed grabbed her by the leg and pulled her under the water. He removes his hand from my thigh altogether.
I don't know. Maybe some kids fooling around.
Which kids? Did you see any other kids swimming where she was? He is silent for a moment.
I do not understand.
What is your worry? I grip the blanket with my fists. Did you notice Nico talking to her? Like, right before this whole drowning thing happened? He narrows his eyes.
No. I saw it.
He sits up fully in bed this time. I wasn't in the mood before, but it's safe to say that he isn't either anymore.
What are you saying, Mili?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just trying to figure out what happened.
Are you saying our son tried to drown Suzette? Is that what you think?
No, I say, even though that is kind of what I was thinking. Enzo didn't see the way Nico was glaring at her before they went into the water.
Well, good, because he did not.
You're sure?
Yes!
He shoots me an exasperated look.
I saw him. He wasn't near her. Like I said, it was seaweed or other kids.
But he's lying to me. I'm sure of it, because I saw Nico next to her myself not long before she went under. He's just telling me what he thinks I need to hear. But what I want is the truth.
Nico is a good kid, Enzo says stubbornly. You should not worry so much. He's bad for your blood pressure.
Except, I can't help but think that right now, I have much worse problems than my blood pressure. 40. I wake up at 3 in the morning, covered in sweat. I was having some sort of bad dream. In the dream, I was floating in the ocean. And all of a sudden, a hand closed around my ankle and started pulling me down into the water. I was screaming, trying to get free. But the hand kept pulling and pulling. And sure enough, I started going under. That's when I woke up. It's been a week since our attempted trip to the beach went sour, and it feels like things haven't been the same since that day, although I can't put my finger on why. Enzo has been acting distant all week, but it's not something I could call him on because he isn't really doing anything wrong. He just seems oddly distracted. The sky is clear tonight, and moonlight is streaming in through the windows of the bedroom. I roll my head to the side, expecting to see my husband sound asleep beside me. But that's not what I see. Enzo isn't sleeping soundly. In fact, he's not in the bed at all. What the hell? I sit up straight in bed, wide awake. I'm the one who wakes up all the time in the middle of the night, but Enzo is a sound sleeper. I'm not sure if I've ever woken up to find him missing from our bed before. Where could he be? Is he in the bathroom? But I can clearly see the master bathroom. He's not there. The sound of a car engine catches my attention. I dart over to the window, and my mouth falls open when my husband's truck pulls into our driveway. What was he doing driving around our neighborhood in the middle of the night? As he parks in the driveway, the cab of his truck is out of sight, so I can't see him climbing out. More importantly, I can't see if he was alone in there. I don't know what would be worse, if he were driving around in the middle of the night by himself, or if he were with somebody. Who am I kidding? With somebody is definitely worse. My husband's footsteps grow louder as he climbs the stairs leading up to the second floor. He's moving slowly, trying not to make too much noise. He's hoping not to wake me. He's hoping that when he gets back to the bedroom, I will be sound asleep and none the wiser. He is in for a surprise. The door to the bedroom cracks open. Enzo peeks his head inside, and his eyes widen when he sees me sitting up in bed.
Mili, he says. Hello.
Where were you? I snap at him.
I was...
He looks over his shoulder in the direction of the hallway.
I was thirsty. I just went downstairs to get a drink of water.
In blue jeans?
Enzo looks down at his jeans and t-shirt. He's also wearing socks, which he would never sleep in. It's very clear that between the time when he went to bed with me and this moment, he put on clothing. Before he can come up with yet another lie, I say, I saw your truck pulling into the driveway. So, tell me again. Where were you?
I am sorry. He rubs the back of his neck. I was having trouble sleeping, so I go for a drive. I did not want to bother you or worry you.
You went for a drive?
I did.
Where did you go?
He shrugs. Just drive around neighborhood.
By yourself?
He nods. Myself.
I remember the way he smiled at that police officer who caught him speeding and lied through his teeth. I've known him a long time, but if I did not already know the truth that day, I never would have known he was lying. And when I look at him now, I truly can't tell. Was he just going for a drive because he couldn't sleep? Or was he doing something more ominous?
You should not worry, he tells me. It's nothing. Just a quick drive, and now I'm back.
He lets out a loud yawn.
And it worked. Now I am tired.
He kicks off his blue jeans, then strips off his t-shirt. He takes off his socks one by one and tosses them in the laundry basket. Then he climbs into bed beside me and wraps his arms around me.
Go to sleep, Mealy, he murmurs. It is late.
I want to go to sleep. I'm tired, and I've got a long day at work tomorrow. I wish I could close my eyes and drift off the way he seems to be doing. I wish that more than anything. But it's extremely hard to sleep when another woman's perfume is tickling your nostrils.
41. Enzo is cheating on me. It's all I can think about as I drive home from work, even though I'm making excellent time on the Long Island Expressway for a change. It's been 2 nights since Enzo snuck out in the middle of the night. 2 nights since he came home stinking of what I'm pretty sure was Suzette's perfume. And I can't seem to get it out of my head. Enzo is acting like everything is fine. He's sticking with his story about the random drive in the middle of the night. He hasn't tearfully confessed to a night of passion with Suzette, and I haven't smelled her perfume on him again. I keep trying to come up with an innocent explanation, but I can't. When Enzo and I went to bed that night, he did not smell like perfume. He obviously got up during the night, went somewhere with her in his car, and was gone until 3 in the morning. And then he came home and pretended like nothing had happened. When I get home, Enzo's truck is parked in front of the house. Well, at least he's home now. Maybe I should talk to him about this. Even if there isn't an innocent explanation, maybe it's better to just get it out in the open. I never wanted to be the kind of wife who has to pretend like she's clueless about her husband messing around behind her back. When I get inside, the kids' shoes are strewn about near the front door. They are obviously upstairs. But I don't see Enzo's boots. So his car is parked outside, and yet he's not home. He must be with Suzette. I grit my teeth.
I am so sick of this woman. I am so sick of Enzo running over to her house to work in her backyard. I had to watch my husband rescue her from the ocean when she was probably never even drowning in the first place. I bet she made the whole thing up. After all, who gets pulled into the water by seaweed? I'm done being the good neighbor. I'm going to tell that woman what I think of her once and for all. And then I'm bringing my husband home with me. I don't bother to take my own shoes off. I slam the front door to our house as I walk outside and tromp across both of our freshly cut lawns to get to 12 Locust Street. I press my thumb into the doorbell, letting it ring for far longer than I need to. No answer. I press it again for the second time, with the same result. It's quiet inside the house. No footsteps coming to answer. Nothing. And I don't hear the sounds of Enzo's equipment in the backyard. What if they don't hear the doorbell because they're busy? What if they are upstairs in Suzette's bedroom and they're... Oh, God, I don't want to think about it. On a whim, I put my hand on the doorknob. I didn't expect it to turn, but it does. I turn the knob all the way to the right and lean against the door to push it open. I step into the foyer of the Lowells' large house. It seems quiet. I don't hear any beds a-rocking upstairs, that's for sure. Suzette? I call out. And then, in a low growl, Enzo? Again, no answer. I walk through the foyer. Everything is still quiet. It truly doesn't sound like there is anyone home. But when I get into the living room, I notice something else. It's a distinctive odor, one that I have become very familiar with. It's the stench of blood. Why does this house smell like blood? And it's not faint. The house reeks of it. Whereas the last time I was here, it smelled like lilacs or something. Suzette? I call out. And this time, there's a tremor in my voice. I lower my eyes, and that's when I see it, around the corner of the stairwell. A foot sticking out, attached to a lifeless body on the ground. A pair of dead eyes stare up at the ceiling, and a pool of blood spreads slowly across the living room floor. I recognize what I'm looking at immediately, and it takes everything I have not to collapse onto the floor. It's Jonathan Lowell, and someone slit his throat. Part 2. 42. I've got to call 911. Now. Of course, there is no saving Jonathan Lowell. He is very much dead. But what scares me even more is that there is still blood leaking from his neck. That means that whoever killed him did it extremely recently. Is it possible they're still in the house? A door slams somewhere in the house. It sounds like the back door. Is that somebody leaving the house? Or are they coming back inside to get rid of witnesses? I pat my pockets, searching for my phone. All I can find are my house keys. And then I remember. I made a call while I was in my car, and then dropped my phone in my purse, which is currently back at my house. I don't know if Jonathan has a phone in his pocket that I could use, but there's no way I'm going to touch him. I've got to get back to my house to call the police.
I try not to think about the possibility that the killer could have escaped next door to the house where my children live, as I do an about-face and run for the front door. I don't even look behind me. I make a beeline out of the house and back to my own home. I don't stop running until I get to my front door, and then I come inside and slam it behind me. When I get into the house, the first thing I hear is the sound of running water coming from the kitchen. Then I hear the swears in Italian. My husband is home. At least he will know what to do in this situation. I've been in scenarios like this before, and he is one of the few people I can trust. When I get to the kitchen, Enzo is bent over the sink, washing his hands. Again, he swears under his breath. As I come closer, I catch a glimpse of the dark red liquid circling the drain. What is he washing off his hands? Enzo, I say. He glances over his shoulder.
Mili, give me one second. I slipped and cut my hand with clippers. Stupido.
Except, I don't see a cut on his hand. All I see is a lot of blood going down the drain. Something is wrong, he asks me. I open my mouth to tell him the terrible thing that I just saw. Jonathan Lowell is dead in the house next door. But as he turns around to reveal the blood all over his white t-shirt, I have a horrible feeling he already knows.
Mili, he says.
In the distance, the sound of sirens grows louder. Except, I never called the police. Somehow, they are coming anyway. Somehow, they know what has happened. He furrows his dark eyebrows.
Mili, what is going on?
Jonathan Lowell is dead, I choke out. Somebody stabbed him.
What?
I wasn't sure if he was lying 2 days ago when he disappeared from our bedroom in the middle of the night. But at this moment, Enzo truly looks astonished. I could almost swear on my life that he is shocked by what I am telling him. Almost. Enzo's gaze drops to his shirt, speckled in still damp blood. When he lifts his eyes again and sees my face, he takes a step back.
I told you, I cut myself. This is my blood. My blood.
The sirens are much louder now. The police car will be here any moment. Change your shirt, I tell him. Enzo is frozen for a moment, but finally he nods. He runs upstairs to get rid of his bloody shirt, and whatever else he needs to get rid of. 43.